You're about to hear my conversation with Ian Landsman, where we'll talk about rebuilding a SaaS from the ground up, even after over 10 years in business. The why, the what, and the how. We'll get into it. Hey, here's my real-time-ish update for you, and I'm recording this one on May 6th, 2024. First, I just want to say that once and for all, the name of this podcast, I'm sticking with the name Open Threads. You may have noticed I had briefly renamed it there in early 2024. I was using the name Full Stack Founder. Well, long story short, I'm sunsetting that brand name and that website. It was a short-lived project that just didn't quite stick. So this podcast is back to its original name, Open Threads, from here on out. Okay, so as for my update, my main focus now continues to be instrumental products. That is my product studio where I partner with clients mainly on UI and UX work. And I specialize in designing modern interfaces for SaaS companies. And I deliver my designs in the form of coded HTML and Tailwind CSS templates and components. So that's the main service that I've been working with a couple of clients lately on, and it's something that I continue to really double down on the rest of this year. Other than that, I'm spending the rest of my time building out some new software products of my own to add to my small portfolio. My main SaaS product, Clarity Flow, continues to run smoothly with my small team, and we're always working on some improvements there. So that's my update for now. On to the show. So I'm about to roll the interview with my friend Ian Landsman. We recorded this one on November 3rd, 2023. And in this conversation, we talk all about Ian's business at Userscape, and they are building HelpSpot. Well, they've built it. They've been running it for over 10 years. But this year, as we get into 2024, they are embarking on a full rebuild. And I wanted to understand the story there. It's a good one. Here's my conversation with Ian. Enjoy. Ian Landsman, you're back on the show. Good to connect with you again.
Back.
Yeah.
Back, baby.
The whole show is back. It's been on hiatus for about a year, and we're bringing it back. I think your episode might be the first one back. So, yes.
Oh, should be wow. Fun. I didn't realize that. That's
I awesome. Recorded one yesterday with Adam Gilbert, founder of My Body Tutor, which is a super, super interesting business.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's so cool because, like, I just met him for the first time yesterday. And we're like on the podcast and we realize that we live like 20 minutes away from each other in Connecticut.
Isn't that funny how that happens?
Amazing.
It's crazy.
So Ian, I mean, you've been all over the internet for well over a decade at this point.
Two decades. Holy shit. Crazy. Getting old.
Laravel extraordinaire. We'll get into the whole Laravel ecosystem, I think, in the next one here. But, you know, you're the founder of Userscape, and which makes HelpSpot. And I thought we would dive into that because, as I understand it, you're going through, what do you call this? Is this a rebuild, a relaunch, redesign?
Yeah, we're doing a full rebuild, ground up. And it's still pretty early, so I've been tinkering around with this for already almost a year, but it was been much more like experimental, like kind of prototyping different things and just learning, you know, just getting caught up on technology. I definitely know really well the Laravel world, but then there's obviously any more modern app has a lot more JavaScript in it and things like that. So I've been getting up to speed on what's going on over there and just kind of planning out what we want to do. So so kind of now we're into like actually constructing what will become the next version.
Awesome. All right. I want to unpack this a little bit, like especially around the why and the strategy behind actually rebuilding. But can you give us like a quick recap of the history? Like when did HelpSpot actually initially start? When did it launch?
Yeah. So it launched in 2005. Okay. So we're coming up on 20-year anniversary here in 2025, which will be crazy.
And it started like not even as a SaaS, right? It was always on premise.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, even today, it's sort of not even a SaaS. We do offer a SaaS version, but basically we just take the on-premise version and host it for people. So you get your own virtual machine. You have basically your own stack. There is a shared database, but each customer has their own database on that database server. So it's not at all built like a regular SaaS app with a single monolithic database with tenant IDs and things like that, which has its pluses and minuses. Like, we're sort of reaching some constraints there, which is part of what we're doing with reworking it. But it does have a lot of advantages too. Like, people can move back and forth between being on-premise and hosted, and you know, different accounts can get different levels of resources and things like that if we need to. And so there are some sort of interesting flexibility items there, but
interesting.
But yeah, started on premise. It was on premise for the first like 10 years or so. And then we had a partner who would host it for people, like on an old school like PHP hosting platform. So we would just send people over to there. But then obviously the expectations became that you could just,
so like,
you know, get it from the provider.
So an organization, like, I don't know, let's say like it's a university or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They come, like, at least in the old model, or I guess still today, right? You sell it this way. Mm-hmm. With on,
still today.
So they go through your sales process. You sell them on implementing HelpSpot for their organization. Mm-hmm. They then need to engage their own hosting provider.
Well, so how it worked today, like just staying in the modern era, you have a choice between hosting it yourself and or having us host it. So if we're hosting it, it's from the end user's perspective, it's like a SaaS. It's like any other SaaS. Right. Like, they just sign up on our website. They get, in a few minutes, they get to log into their HelpSpot and they can start using it.
Yeah.
If you go on premise, then most of the time at this point, what you're really talking about is a company that has their own IT resources and infrastructure. And so that they are going,
like,
to,
they have their own servers
install it themselves. Right. They have their own servers. Now, their own servers can mean a lot of different things at this point. Like, sometimes it means they physically have servers. Sometimes it means they just have their own AWS account and they're still going to host it on AWS, just like we host it on AWS.
Yeah.
But, you know, within their own network on AWS,
they own it, they control it.
Stuff,
yep.
Right. They control when they update it. They control how they back it up. They control all that stuff, mm-hmm. about it. So that's usually what we're looking at. It's like, so at this point, you know, 3/4 of the customers, new customers, are SaaS, mm-hmm. and 1/4 are on-premise.
Got it. And when you did the SaaS, when did you introduce this, the hosted option? Was that like...
It was like 8 or 9 years ago, something like that.
Okay, got it. And so the SaaS version of HelpSpot, so you've always had the on-premise version that you're just describing.
Right.
And then the SaaS version, have you treated that as a totally separate product, or is it like literally the same code base, except it's hosted by you versus hosted by them?
Right, it's literally the same product. All the features are the same, everything's the same. I mean, there are a couple slight differences, but effectively it's identical. And it's just a matter of if we're hosting it for you.
Got it.
Or you're going to go and host it yourself.
Got it.
On your own infrastructure.
So we're recording this at the end of 2023. You're getting into a whole rebuild. Has there ever been a rebuild like this before? Like, is this version
two? No, there's never been a full rebuild. This would be the first full rebuild. We've had some very big...
Refactorings.
Yeah. So like, we moved it onto Laravel at one point. That was a big one, even though now it's still not like a full Laravel app. It's like Laravel's in there and it's sort of the core, but there's still like code libraries and different things from, I mean, literally 18 years ago, some of them. And
it still works.
Yeah, it still works. And this is why they tell you not to rebuild, right? And and then another big one was when, you know, initially like UTF-8 wasn't even like a thing. Like, the database didn't even like support it back at the beginning. So at one point we had a big update that moved the whole system on to be UTF-8 compatible. So that was a huge thing, because we had to like literally move every piece of everyone's data. Like, we basically had to rebuild their database. So even though all the code wasn't different, there was a lot of code changes.
And then
also
migration.
There was this whole database migration thing that was a monster. And so that was a big one. And we do that a lot. Like, we've also done a ton of database migration, because we on-premise customers who want to go to the cloud, you know, we convert them. And so, you know, if they're on MySQL already, then that's a little bit easier. But some of them are on Microsoft SQL Server.
Yeah.
So we have to actually change it to be MySQL compatible and then import that. So there's a few steps there.
So what led to the, when did you decide to embark on a rebuild? Like, when did this whole process sort of start, like, happen?
Well, I mean, I've gone through different phases with it. So about 10 or 12 years ago now, I hired Taylor, who is the creator of Laravel. And basically, I hired him to do the rebuild. Like, that's what we were going to do. And
12 years later, we're going to get started.
12 years later, and we're ready to get started. He does, obviously, hasn't worked here in 9 years or whatever. Right. So, So, I mean, it's been around for a while, but, you know, it's always that trade-off of, obviously, to go into the tank and totally rebuild it means you're not adding as many features to the existing version. And it's just a big undertaking. It's confusing for customers, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's like we get started on it and it's like, oh, is this the right time? Blah, blah, blah. Is there enough upside to it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I want to get into is like, all right, like before we get into the actual, like what you're building and how you plan to roll it out and all that, but like just the initial decision to like, okay, this code base, this product has been serving us well for, you know, 2 decades.
Right.
You know, why now? What is the core problem that a rebuild should solve? What changed, you know?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple things here that are interesting. So the initial like 10, 12 years ago when I wanted to rebuild it, right? There was not any good business case to rebuild it, really. That was just my desire to rebuild a case, which is like, I know so much more now. Like, I mean, version 1 of HubSpot, I'm like there with JavaScript Bible on my lap. Like, I don't even know how to do any of this, the code. There was no frameworks at all. So all the PHP is like my own framework, essentially, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that there are some exceptions to that. You know, so many of us, myself included, lean toward like, just don't rebuild just because you want to. But I think sometimes rebuilding just to use some newer tech or better design internally can add a bunch of speed going forward. Like slow right now while rebuild, but the purpose is like this will 2x or 10x our speed to ship going forward.
Yeah. And I think there's even other, there's just your own satisfaction with working on it. Like this is a product you're going to work on for 2 decades. Like if it's a more fun environment to work in, you're probably going to be happier. And then also you will ship faster and better and
attract happier team members and all that. Yeah.
Right. All that stuff. Right. So I think that that's, and you can leverage just easier, more modern testing and whatever. There's like tons of benefits when you modernize. So I definitely think, and so what we've ended up doing is kind of middle grounding it. We're like, okay, like we moved it basically onto Laravel, but we didn't like totally redo every line of code or the whole interface and things like that. And then obviously, like, I mean, it's been continuously maintained for 20 years. So it's like somebody's been, you know, there's every month there's a release basically with bug fixes and features and whatever. So it's not like we've been just sitting around being like, oh, well, we can't update it onto the newest stuff. So we're just not going to do anything. Like, you know, we just do it in, you know, slightly different way than maybe a modern app would operate in terms of a started today app.
Yeah.
But in general, it's been, you know, fine. And so that's what kept putting me off on it. It's like, there is still risk there. Because ultimately, once you rebuild it, like, I definitely wouldn't want to rebuild it in the sense of like, just feature for feature parity.
I mean, that was going to be another big question.
And make like, it feature for feature.
Yeah, like the benefit of not rebuilding it and maybe just doing like a front end refactoring or something like that is like you don't have to rebuild all the features.
Right. And we've done the front end refactors. Like we probably had 3 or 4 big front end refactors over the years. Right. And that, so to me, part of it is like if we're going to rebuild it, then we also have to take all the other stuff we've learned. So like, yeah, we've learned about the tech, but we've also learned about how people use this tool. And if I was building this tool again, like what would be different? What doesn't make sense the way it works now?
Yeah, like has there been a change in the customer base or the market, the positioning?
Right. I mean, support is so much different than it was 20 years ago, right? Like now you have the emergence of AI. How does that fit in? You have widgets that are like super powerful and people want to embed them in their apps and have it, you know, whether it's a chat or whether it's showing you knowledge base articles or whatever. Like there's just a lot of different functions that weren't really a thing, you know, 20 years ago. And then it's sort of tricky though too, because there is this balance, because a lot of our customers, like the temptation is, okay, like an intercom style widget, right? Like it's super advanced and it does all kinds of stuff, right? Because it's like you drop it in your SaaS app and boom, you have this whole communication system to your customers. But if we look at like HelpSpot's customer base, there's actually not as many uses for that in our existing customer base. Like most of our university customers, like we've been talking about a little bit, like they're not necessarily have a website that they might want live chat, but they don't necessarily need the like Uber super messaging, pushing messages into something.
Yeah, like detect what you're trying to search for, all that kind of.
Right. Like there's different levels there of like how much sophistication they would even want, like, and to be willing to pay for and things like that. So
I also happen to think even for like small SaaS companies like mine, like I also think that, and as a user of SaaS, like I think that those help widgets are overblown. Like they've gotten too, I use them and I have one on a mind, but like I don't want all the advanced features. Like I literally just want a form to send a message or a simple search box to find the article. That's it. That's all I want.
Right. That's and so that's kind of like my, even with this rebuilt HelpSpot, like this, it's going to be more along those lines. Like it's definitely not going to be all the way to the crazy stuff you can do with like an intercom, because at the end of the day, a lot of that stuff is also this whole premise, even with the AI stuff, which like, there's definitely a lot of possibilities there for, but at the same time, it's like, a lot of it is still just like the way it works now. And I think in the future, it'll be different, but the way it all works now, it's still going to be basically the way it's worked in the past for like things like chat boxes, where like you have the vector database. I don't know how much people know about this, but basically there's this way you could kind of stupidly look up chunks of information. And then you could feed those chunks of information to ChatGPT, and it will make it sound nice. So it will obviously be written much better than it was a year ago. If you built this, it would be kind of clunky, right? In terms of the interaction, but it's still that same clunky lookup scheme. So that's where the answers aren't necessarily getting better per se when you get down into
that's like the thing.
Your specific product.
I mean, all right, my hot take sort of like in the making right now as I speak is I think that AI in customer support interactions is. Hey, real quick, this podcast is sponsored by Instrumental Products. That's my product studio where I and my small crew, we take new product ideas from concept to launched. I'm a full stack product designer and developer, and I love collaborating with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies to bring that spark of energy into new product ideas. Think of Instrumental Products as your shortcut to shipping that next idea and getting it into the hands of your customers as efficiently as possible. Got something to ship? Let's talk. Visit instrumentalproducts.com to learn more. Not even close to being impressive there yet. Like, and I'm a I'm super into AI. I love it. I use it every day in my day-to-day work.
Yep.
But in the customer support space, maybe there's stuff I haven't seen yet, but as a user, I don't want to interact with an AI. Like if I'm at a point where I need, where I'm so stuck that I'm actually going to go down to that help widget, it means I couldn't find it on my own. I couldn't figure out the interface on my own. It means I have some sort of edge case that a human is going to need to help me figure out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It gets, you know, everybody throws out there the simplest scenario, right? Like if you have a mobile app and you literally get like five types of questions, like people want a refund, people, whatever, you have like your really super simplistic questions, like, yeah, it'll probably do an okay job at servicing that. Although is it actually doing a better job than if like the widget just popped up the top five questions and one of them is refund? Like, I don't think it's necessarily, it's going to be slower than that. Where the customer could just quickly see like, oh yeah, refund, I want that, bursting in, hey, how do I get a refund?
Yeah, but even stuff like that, like I feel like shouldn't even be in a customer support. Like it should just be in the interface. If you're letting people like one click refund, then just give them that button.
Right. Right. So there are, I mean, I think there are some simple use cases where like on, it's going to take away, you know, maybe it's going to, what you would call in the business, like deflect. You're going to deflect.
I could see AI
some additional percentage,
probably helping
which
internally.
Is great.
Like it could help the support help team be more efficient,
right?
But it doesn't have to be
That's
visible.
That's my more focus, really. Yeah. Too is like, could we, like give you the, you know, some so like most support tools have like the idea of like a canned response of some yeah. fashion. They're called something different sometimes, but whatever. And so, like, could we get it dialed in to where it's like recommending, hey, these three or one of these three is probably the right response for the scenario. It get really easy for the agents, especially like new agents and things like that, who maybe yeah. aren't as familiar. You have 200 canned responses, like looking through them all and figuring it all out takes a long time to learn all those. It's like, well, maybe there's some AI stuff there that can narrow that down a bit, different things like that. And you know, I really think there's some interesting stuff that's going to happen with it, but yeah, I don't think it's all the way to like, yeah, but definitely. Hey, my initial thing was like, oh, like, did we just get like put out of business? Is this just, like,
no,
is not, this just going to take over? But it's like, no, it's
not like
over.
You're, way, it's not like way, you're way, doing way, chatting way. With PDFs. Like they're all getting killed right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're getting killed. But
all right. My, I guess back to my fundamental question is,
yeah.
Or let me ask it another way. What will be different in the product? What is different about HelpSpot version 2?
Right. So version 6, but it'll be yes. Very, so newest yeah. that right. Yeah. This alt version. Yeah. So era 2. So there's gonna be there's a lot of different things that have come together. And I definitely can't get into all of them just yet, but I will say like there is some business elements that I think rebuilding will help us accomplish. And that's I at least want to talk about. Maybe back on in the year and we can go through some of the business case business side of it. But even in terms of the product itself, I think we're hit. So it's definitely still that same like, oh yeah, I would like to use all the new hotness because obviously Laravel has even more new hotness than before and we have Livewire and we have all these great tools. But in addition to that, I do think you have things like AI, which while we just sat here saying it's not taking over totally, I do find it being useful. I think while we could certainly put it into the current code base, I think having it be a new code base kind of refactored from the beginning to think about well,
rather than bolting
if
it
we're
on,
going to have a right rather just being bolted on. It's like if it's more deeply either directly integrated or even spots where, okay, we're not going to do this yet, but in the future, this would be a spot where like it would make sense to have some AI stuff going on. It's like now that can all be constructed and ready for that, even though we're not using it yet, but it's like there and ready. There'll be a lot of interesting things like that.
Are there any like significant features that you're just not going to include? Like killing off features in the process here?
In terms of like the big features, no, like all the big stuff will still be there. Some of it's going to be organized differently. I think it would probably be maybe a little too down in the weeds for here, but so there were some different concepts for sure and different organizational structures, I think, but like big picture, like there'll be tickets and there'll be a knowledge base and you know, reporting and like, so there will be the big chunky things. I think other than that, it'll be really good and I think is more important than ever is like deeper ability to have integrations. Like the older platforms not really set up to integrate with other things in a modern SaaSy type way. So
I feel like that must be like super important for a help desk.
Yeah, it's definitely a key area to be able. So we have our own APIs for integrating, which people do. But again, now you see people, obviously, like they just want to like click a button and integrate with their CRM and not have to like write, even though it's a small amount of code to do it now. And we have a pretty cool system for doing it. It's still like code that has to be written to do this integration, you know, and obviously that's a barrier. So for the bigger tools that we have a lot of customers using or could use, it would be nicer to be like, yeah, like boom, it integrates with Salesforce, let's say, or whatever. And
how do you define your customers now? I mean, is it like a pretty wide range of industries?
Yeah, we're super horizontal. Like, and it's a lot of things you might not even think of. So obviously, like you have IT support, and end customer support, whether you have like a software company supporting customers with a software product, or you're a manufacturer and you sell a product, or your e-commerce site and you sell products and things like that. But then a lot of other use cases too, like HR departments are a big, actually growing segment because all this email,
like internal
about
support,
questions
basically.
About benefits and things like that. Yeah. And so like they're supporting their internal staff with HR issues, or maintenance departments is one we've, another one that's been around for a long time, where like people can email you and be like, hey, the door in building C is messed up or whatever. And this way, like, that's organized for them across a
bigger. It's pretty incredible when you, like, it's like when you already know that a category is super huge, and then you find out it's like it's actually 100 times bigger than that.
It's like anybody who deals with email.
Like there are all these other
use cases. Yeah, there's so many use cases.
Yeah.
Which is why there's like literally thousands of help desk applications. I mean, there is legit thousands of competitors. Yeah. And obviously we all know Zendesk and Intercom, a handful of the big ones, but you know, there's just, they're never ending. And then like there are, and then even in those segments, right? Like there's all these different takes on, I mean, cause there are dedicated HR tools that do the email portion and they do a bunch of other stuff. And there are dedicated maintenance tools and they do maintenance stuff in addition to the email. So like, but you know, they're sometimes more expensive, for example, or whatever. The people don't want all those other features. They just want the email management. So they instead go to something like HelpSpot. Yeah. So it's even more complicated than that. Cause like in vertical, there are dedicated tools that overlap with what a HelpSpot does and things like that. So
I guess given that, given all the different use cases, especially in all these different industries that you wouldn't even think of, how much do you think about or focus on competitors, and especially like who do you even consider to be competitors? Like there's the obvious ones like that everyone knows, the Intercoms and the Zendesks and all that, but like do you even think of them as competitors, or are there all these like use cases for HelpSpot where it's like your customers probably don't even know
right. So that's why I don't get too caught up in the competitors. Like I have a rough idea of like, I keep an eye on the very biggest ones just as like a sort of barometer. Like I can't say I even give it like a ton of thought, but I will poke in on like what Intercom's doing, what Zendesk is doing. Beyond like those two, really, I don't really pay a lot of attention to anybody else. And even those, it's not so much because we're always competing against a lot of different companies. Like, and it's a kind of product where pretty often there is a scenario where it's like, hey, we have, you know, we're looking at seven different products and we have a committee that's evaluating and like, it's a whole thing. Right. And so we're doing demos and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's just so many tools. It's like, so we will sometimes get into one when it's like a customer's asking us like, hey, does it do this thing another tool does or whatever? And then we'll go figure that out. But yeah, I don't really spend a lot of time with it.
I mean, that's the thing for me with competitors. Like, yeah, I could do a Google search and find a bunch of competitors, but I don't do that. I don't care about that. What I care about is what the customers are telling us or
primarily
are asking
what
me about.
Focus is, yeah.
How are you different from this? Or I'm switching from that. And like that's who raises to the top of the list of the competitors that I kind of care about.
That's pretty much my take on it too. And, you know, I think it's also, you have to factor in like your place in the market, your business model with it. I mean, we're definitely, you know, a lower cost provider. We're not the cheapest provider, but we are also not Zendesk. So Zendesk is, you know, going to be $50 an agent at the pretty low end, up to hundreds of dollars an agent a month. Salesforce has a help desk module that the top tier is $650 a user a month. So, you know, these are all these different market segments. Yeah, you got to niche yourself in both with the feature set and the pricing model. We have some customers who are very price sensitive. We have other customers who are less price sensitive. And you have big customers that are customers who use us because they can get 250 users for $29,000 a year. And they're like, that's great because we don't want to spend $290,000 a year for the task that this is because it's probably not, in those cases with HelpSpot anyway, it's not usually like a room full of literally 250 agents. It's more like there's maybe like 50 core agents and there's 200 sort of other people, whether they're managers or whatever, who are like not in there all the time and they don't necessarily want to pay $200 a user a month for a person who goes in there for an hour a month or whatever. So there's those kind of trade-offs that people are making.
I guess as we start to wrap up this episode about the rebuilding, I mean, What can you tell us about the project and the process of actually rebuilding it, and then sort of the plan for rolling it out? So like
the first question that I would have about the process is like, how long? So, I mean, once you get past the strategic decision making and saying like, all right, we're going to break ground on this and start coding or designing or whatever, like from that point to having some version ready to bring out to the world, like, is that a year? Like, is that more? Like, what are we looking
at? Well, you know, so it's sort of interesting. I don't like to work with deadlines because I worked for myself for a long time here, right? And the product's doing fine. So there's not like this big push of like, boy, we need this new version because like things are heading the wrong direction and like, let's really crunch on it. So I guess that would be kind of my ballpark estimate. But
yeah, and like a part B on that is like, all right, you're building a whole new version. So that takes a ton of resources. What's going on the existing product during that time, right? Like, what's the cost in terms of?
So it's sort of interesting. This is a change I made actually from previous times we've tried this, and I had developers kind of doing the work on it, and then I was managing. And I've gone a different route this time, where I'm doing the sort of version one of the new build, and it won't be all me. Forever, and it won't be all me all the way to the end of where it's releasable, but it is going to be all me for right now because I feel like this is just a totally me thing, but I'm not good at sort of thinking through the problem space and then just like writing that because then I'm almost never happy with what comes out the other side. And I just feel like I need to be the one in there in the code trying out, do I like this interface for this idea? Getting the big structural things of how it should be in my head out. And then like, once that structure's there, then it's like, yes, like we can get in there and have other devs like working on the million little features that come out of the big structure of it. But
I'm the same way with that stuff. And that's another thing that I've noticed on your Twitter feed over the last several months is like, man, Ian is getting really technical.
I'm back in the code. I'm deep in the code.
You're definitely getting back in it.
Yeah.
But I'm the same way with stuff. It's like I design and build most of the product myself, but then like for the initial version of stuff, but then it gets to a point where we need to ship so much that I do delegate, that I do spend a ton of time writing out detailed, I mean, super detailed specs for my developer to build a new thing. And a lot of times it gets to a point, it's like, man, I'm spending a whole week or more just writing these specs for my developers. It's like, I literally, and I'm writing them in a checklist that's like literally like programming logic. And I'm like, why am I not just in the code base right now, you know? But there's still the thing where it's like, all right, it seems simple on paper, but I know that once I get into it, 1 week is going to turn into 4 weeks.
And also there is the like, you know, it depends on your setup. Like, I mean, how experienced your developers are, how long they've been with you and know the product and all those things. Like, obviously you can get shorthand for things a lot easier with somebody. You know, like, so back to your kind of original question, like mainline HelpSpot is still chugging along. Like, I still do a little bit in there, but primarily there's another developer who does that. And the bugs are
like very maintainable. Bugs are being fixed,
new features are being added. So stuff's still happening there. And we're, again, it's a 20-year-old product. So it's not like people are like, oh man, it's been a week. Why isn't there new features and new stuff? Like, so if we're like every month shipping a solid release or every 2 months with like good bug fixes, a couple nice little features, like, you know, nobody's coming to us being like, what the hell is going on? Where's the new stuff? Like, everybody's happy. Customers are happy. We're happy. So we can kind of keep that pace going. It's fine. And you know, that's the developer who's worked here like 9 years, right? So like, he knows deeply HelpSpot.
So they have the history.
When it's time for him to work on 6, or you know what I call 6, the new version, like, you know, he understands the philosophy of what we're trying to do, right, and how we operate. Mm-hmm. So I don't, there's a lot that's baked in, so that helps a lot.
What's the plan with customers? Mm-hmm. so when it comes time to release it, I'm guessing that'll be like sometime in 2024.
Right. Yeah, I would say 24 probably, maybe earlier, but.
So is it going to be like, hey, everyone, you're all moving over? No. Or is it like, you can use HelpSpot Classic? Or
we're
you
going
can get on the new thing.
So I'm not the world's biggest DHH fan. We don't have time to cover that. We don't have time to cover that here. But Really? I will say one of the things I do like that they did, you could stay on the old version of Basecamp if you want to. And that's definitely the philosophy we're going to have for multiple reasons. But, you know, basically, I don't want to move everybody. There will be these differences of how it works. There will be differences in the structure.
Yep.
You know, we're a very small team. Just even constrained. We have customers with dozens to some of them hundreds of gigabytes of data. You know, the construction of the way to convert that to the new system, I mean, that's a huge application on its own. So I don't necessarily want to wait for that huge application to be built until we release this. So it's like, hey, my current thinking is there'll be like a light version of that, which is like, you want to be on the new hotness. There's going to be a way to maybe move your user, move your general structure, but like maybe not all your data. Or maybe not other, or maybe that's like the basics of the data, but not like all the far reaching tentacles of the data, you know, something where it's like, mm-hmm. we can build a simpler V1 of it for people who want to be bleeding edge and move over, like, and they're willing to take that trade off. But everybody else, they can.
And I guess it also really helps. It also really helps that HelpSpot has always had this on-premise version. So like, theoretically, like it's like the, Even if you have all these, you know, legacy customers who were on your quote unquote hosted version, that's like they're basically using the on-premise version, but you've installed right. it.
We can
like,
run that.
So you've always had that like that ability to just offer it on-premise. Right. So it's like you'll continue to have customers who just use the old.
Yeah, I mean, we have customers who will use on-premise forever, right? Yeah. And then there's but we'll host the customers who are on HelpSpot 5, which is like the current version. So there's definitely not going to be the like, all right, 6 is here. You're all just getting shoved over there. It will be a multi-year project to convert the people on HelpSpot 5 to HelpSpot 6. Some of them may never go, and that's fine. Yeah. That will still exist and be supported. And then, you know, it obviously isn't going to get like a lot of new features at that point. Like once 6 is out, you know, that will ramp down in terms of feature development, but it would still get bug fixes. It would definitely get any security fixes. And then 6 would be obviously the new features and new hotness type stuff. But that's kind of the current plan. Anyway.
Good stuff. I'm excited. I've been a fan of watching you get more technical.
Yeah, lately. It's been nice so to get back into it. I mean, that's what got me started with it too.
Really getting into the product.
To get back into it. It's like, it gets 20 years. Like, I need to keep it fun for me too. Like, it's like, obviously making money is fun. I like making money. That's a certain kind of fun. But I do like coding and I do like getting in there and designing a feature and coming up with a new idea for something that's going to help the customers, be better at their support and helping their customers. So it is really nice to kind of just be in there and then just take all I've learned. I mean, I've learned so much in this 20 years about how to scale things and how to where the pain points are in the support process and all that stuff. So it is useful and fun to be able to put that into action
for sure.
The interface and everything.
Well, Ian, I'm excited to see this roll out and getting it all together. It seems like a beast of a project and a thing for the whole business. So that's the rebuild. We're gonna keep watching. I think in our next episode we'll talk about Laravel and all things Laravel ecosystem.
That does it for today's episode of Open Threads. What'd you think? Let me know on Twitter or X. I'm at CastJam. And you can find the full videos for all episodes of Open Threads on the YouTube channel for this podcast. That's youtube.com/openthreads. One more thing. I'd really appreciate if you'd give this podcast a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps a lot. Thanks for listening. I'll see you on the next one. Thank you.